Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sales to Success. This is an open forum for listeners to interact with master sales representatives and business owners in order to learn strategies to sell more effectively. Whether you are a professional salesperson or an entrepreneur selling your goods and services, Sales to Success is the place for you. Sales to Success, along with IMA Mastermind and Think and Grow Rich, is the one-stop shop for people who are interested in truly improving themselves. Our aim is to help you to think and grow rich while you establish your own mastermind organization built around the art of selling. Sell to Success is where sales professionals come together to sharpen each other's iron.
Good evening. Welcome to the International Masterminders Association Blog Talk Radio Show, Sell to Success. I'm your host, Laura A. Greer, along with our co-host, Rufus Curry Jr. Rufus, go ahead and greet our listening audience.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Rufus Curry Jr., the only one you will ever meet. I'm really amped up about tonight's show because we have a special guest, and I love to, through studying martial arts, I love to be in the presence of a black belt. So we have a black belt in sales and marketing on tonight.
Awesome. Great. I, too, join Rufus, and I am so excited. I have been looking forward to this, my goodness, for about a month or so, having our special guest today. So we are energized, and we are ready, and we are excited. This lovely, sunny South Florida Wednesday evening, our guest is none other than Mrs. Abigail Tiffenthaler, and she is, let me just tell you a little about Ms. Abigail before we bring her on the air, and she is a seasoned entrepreneur who has successfully developed multiple home-based businesses. She is dedicated to helping entrepreneurs achieve both personal and professional success. She is a solutions provider, effective communicator, and has built her expertise by developing strategic initiatives that are outside normal paradigms and focus on big picture results. Her career started in the marketing department of E.F. Hutton, followed by New York City ad agency, where she developed and implemented multi-million-dollar programs and supported boutique clients. After earning her MA, she spent time in product management and then joined a direct marketing firm, followed by a small women-owned strategic marketing agency. Ms. Abigail moved to Florida and started a company that was focused on promotional items and fulfillment service. The business realized a $1 million in sales in year two and almost $2 million in year six. After 15 years, Ms. Abigail closed her business to consult with entrepreneurs in the areas of business strategy. Today, her company, Sweet Spot Strategies, Inc., help small and mid-sized businesses develop focused strategies and define statics so that they can optimize their business success. Abigail, welcome to Sales to Success. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. I loved Rufus's introduction about talking to a black belt. I thought that was so wonderful. I feel better already.
No, you know what, Abigail, hey, I was taught growing up, give honor to whom honor is due. It takes nothing from you. Actually, it adds to you by doing, hey, it, the truth is the truth anyway, so I might as well, I seem smarter by saying what's obvious.
Yes, well, thank you. It's, you know, I've been in marketing and sales, literally, I tell people, since I was three. So almost, you know, almost 50 years of really understanding this great field called marketing. And by being a person who loves to sell, somebody who's been able to help a lot of other companies and individuals with their marketing activity. So I've been able to really do some amazing things because I've had some great experiences and great teachers.
Yeah, because,
oh, wow.
You know, with the, you know, and it's interesting, we talk about the marketing. I mean, what, you know, we understand sales because we go out, as most people do, but let's not take anything for granted. But when we talk about marketing, what exactly is marketing? You know, and to steal a quote from Denzel Washington in the movie Philadelphia, explain it to me like I'm 5 years old.
Well, I always say, you know, a lot of people think that sales and marketing are the same thing. And sales is all about developing the promise. And I'm sorry, marketing is all about developing the promise. And sales is all about delivering on it. So what happens when you're marketing is you are really with the proper upfront research and the proper upfront targeting and brand identification and graphic identification, you're now able to really go after customers, potential customers who you think might like your product. That's marketing. That's the marketing aspect of running your business, is taking your brand, once it's been developed and once it's been cured, so to speak, and proven, and developing strategies and tactics to reach that target audience. And then the sales process starts to deliver on the promise that the marketing strategies and activities develop. Does that make sense? So that's probably not a 5-year-old description. Maybe that's a 10 or a 12-year-old description. But really, I said it best in the beginning. Marketing creates the promise. Sales delivers on the promise.
Makes sense to me.
Good.
Now, Abigail, you said that you have been in sales basically since you were since the age of three. How
right.
was that?
Well, I grew up in the advertising industry and was very blessed to grow up in New York City where, you know, as crazy as it sounds, people don't think big cities are safe, but it really was. And my parents had a summer home off of the Long Island coast, and I would walk up and down the beach at the age of 3 and 4, and I would invite people over to my parents' house for cocktails or for hors d'oeuvres or for a party. And, you know, I always was the person who never minded starting the conversation. So that's a great way to get used to being comfortable in selling. Is selling is a conversation. It really is a conversation, and that's what I started doing at the age of three, talking to strangers and helping them something that I thought they might want. They might want to meet other people from the community. They might want to enjoy a glass of wine, or they might want to have some food. So I was just starting that conversation.
Wow.
And
how about the fear factor? Was there a fear factor there at any point in time?
I'm sure there was at some point in time or another, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, since I have been in sales most of my life, even working in ad agencies, I was in account development. So I was out there calling on clients to come and use our ad agency services. You know, I learned this very early on, and I can't even tell you who taught it to me,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes the greatest word you'll ever hear is no, because at least it's a definitive answer. We all want to hear yes, but no at least gives us a parameter to move forward, where a lot of people will say, well, she said maybe, or he said, yes, I think so. Yes and no are very empowering words. So knowing no is really just one step closer to either closing that relationship so I can move on to start a new one, or saying to that relationship, okay, is it no now or is it no forever? Because if it's no now, that could just simply mean the timing isn't right. That could simply mean I'm too distracted and can't be thinking about it. It could mean I'm out of my budget for the year. It can mean so many different things. But at least it allows you to have another conversation. And so I don't really think that I've ever been truly afraid of the word no, because I always know that there's more to it. And it's not personal. The biggest thing that salespeople are afraid of, or I should say even non-salespeople, the biggest thing that I find that business owners are afraid of is that they don't want to appear salesy. And the biggest thing is they don't want to hear no, because they're taking it personally. And it's got nothing to do with them. 99% of the time, it has nothing to do with them. It really has something to do with some issue, timing, budget, a good fit for the product. It's really got nothing to do with the person themselves. And a lot of non-salespeople will take no as a personal, well, she didn't like me, or he didn't like me, or he didn't like my product. So have I ever really been afraid of it? I would say probably no,
That's great. Awesome. Okay, I believe at this time we're going to go to a commercial, and then we will return and continue our discussion, our dialogue with Ms. Abigail Tiefenthaler.
At Sales to Success, we strongly encourage each of our listeners to acquire a personal copy of How I Raised Myself from Failure to Success in Selling by Frank Betker. ISBN number 0671-79437X. I say again, ISBN 0671-79437X by Frank Betker, BETTGER. Sell to Success.
Abigail, another question that we would like to have you address with your answer. In looking over your bio, you indicated that your first year in business, that your company gained a profit in the amount of about $1 million. And that when in the research that I've done, and myself being a new entrepreneur, indicate that most people do not mass a profit until maybe between years 3 through 5. What would you say contributed to your profit in the very first year?
I think a couple of things did. Number one is I was in a survival mode, and this business that I started was supporting a family. My husband and I had recently relocated to South Florida. I came down here as to partner with some with two people, and that fell through. So we were left with an immediate need for income, and that was critical that I start having a business that was seeing some success quickly. So I just was very driven. But I will also tell you that I started my business with the bare minimums. And so I basically was able to make more than I spent. I didn't have business cards in the beginning. I started with a computer, a 486 computer for anybody out there who's older, and a phone. And I just got on the phone, and I called people, and I called people, and I sent emails, and I wrote letters, and I showed up at people's offices, and I did all of the things that I needed to do to get in front of as many people as I could. I didn't know anything about networking in those days. There was no social media. We're going back to 1997. So it really was just a full-out assault, you know, on the South Florida marketplace, talking to anybody who would listen. And I didn't go in asking for an order. I went in asking to be a part of the process.
Mm.
Because I was selling an item that people, that companies were buying, and a lot of people bought from friends and other, you know, relationships. I came in and I said, all I want to do is get up to bat. Please let me quote a job. Let me use me. Compare apples to apples. Take your current vendor and take me and just see how the process is a little different, how the pricing is a little different, how the conversation is a little different. And I found very quickly that a lot of people in the South Florida market were selling promotional items, and I was selling promotional solutions. And I listened to the client to find out what it was that they weren't getting from their current suppliers, because if I could deliver that, that's what I focused on. So it was a matter of just a little bit of luck, I mean, but a lot of drive, and then not starting my business with everything in place, because I added to it as I was started making money. I bought the research tools I needed. You know, I got the business cards eventually. I bought catalogs so I could leave them places. But you don't have to have everything to get started.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
now,
that's what I think.
How did you get beyond the gatekeeper? Because, you know, in the business world, and I heard what
right.
you said about you call, sometimes, I mean, you send out the mail, or you tell them how the different touches. But many times when you go to companies and you simply go to their office, how do you get beyond that gate? How did you get beyond the gatekeeper?
I would say the two pieces that I found successful was, one, I started the relationship with the gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the person who answered the phone was the most important person in that company. And I think a lot of times people mistake the receptionist as just the person who answers the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have them in your court. You need to be working with them. They need to understand that you're not going to waste somebody's time. So
mm-hmm.
my feeling was, everybody I spoke to, from the receptionist to the secretary, if I got there and there was somebody, the maintenance person in the bathroom, I was very sensitive to the fact that they all had a role to play. So
mm-hmm.
that was one thing that I think gave me faster access. And then secondly, I would talk to people and say, I'm not sure if you can help me, but if you can't help me, who do I speak to? And in those days, employees were a little more forthcoming than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that it was a little bit easier because, number one, a live person answered the phone. We didn't have this automatic stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
this push one for this department or push two. Number two, a lot of times you could go and look up the people in a department to know who the director of marketing was or who the director of sales was. Now, even though we have access to so much information, they don't necessarily publish that on the internet because they don't want everybody bombarding them. So access to information made it a little bit easier to access the gatekeeper and move from there, because you could ask for the right person with confidence,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense to you.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, Abba, if you don't, I'm going to ask, you know, I look at when we speak in terms of basically we were talking about communications. I was taught, you know, in the military, you don't have to be at the top to run things. And also, you know, when I go to the general's office or I go to the colonel's office, the secretary or the, as we call them, office managers or what have you, executive officers, those individuals, there's like a transfer or a blessing of power because they sit in that seat. So they have a degree of influence and ownership to that place that you're speaking to. But the question I want to ask is, you know, now that the workforce is getting younger and you're talking to, you know, as my background in the military, my background in education, as I talk to young folks on a daily basis, and they communicate completely different. How do you track that up when you're talking to this young upstart with, you know, all the fresh information, which is great out of the book, but they communicate completely differently than us old school folks do.
Right, right. And I would say that I'm still deciphering that code in all honesty. We're at an interesting place where a lot of businesses still operate old school and some businesses are now operating new school. A lot of it depends with how old the business is and how long it's been around and who's at the helm of it. But using social media, there are still ways of navigating through an organization. And it just requires a little more due diligence. I mean, you've got LinkedIn as a great, as a great resource to capture information. Going on websites and looking at executive summaries or annual reports can be helpful. There's still some old school things that can be done, but I agree that we're definitely in a transition, and I have not cracked that code to perfection yet, where I'm comfortable, you know, giving a system or a template for talking about how to address the next generation of business owners.
Yeah. I really appreciate you taking the opportunity to come to us and share this information because, you know, I tell students all the time, you learn more from listening than you do from talking and hearing this. And you've done a lot of mining of information. You've made some mistakes. What is the, Napoleon Hill talks about in the book Think and Grow Rich, he talks about looking for that seed of, that equivalent opportunity, looking for that seed in the failure and making a mistake and being able to find that kernel of opportunity or wisdom and flipping around. What's the greatest mistake that you've made as a business person and which turned around to be your greatest lesson and that has catapulted you forward? You talk about not learning to that no being a great thing. What mistake that you've made has taught you the greatest lesson?
Well, nothing pops into my head immediately, which is interesting. I'm going to have to think about that. But, you know, along the way, I've made mistakes of not following up enough with somebody. I always thought I was really the follow-up queen and losing an opportunity because somebody else just was there and stayed there. And when the customer finally decided to purchase, somebody else was there. So I know I've lost business in the past by just not keeping connected. Does it happen a lot? It really doesn't, because following up was one of the greatest skills I had and used regularly. I think when I came down to Florida and had planned on partnering with these two people and that fell through, I got so busy trying to kick into survival mode that I never really saw the blessing in that. And it took me a couple of years to really look back at the success and go, that wouldn't have happened had I not come to Florida. That wouldn't have happened had I not had this opportunity with these two people that fell through. So a lot of times we just don't see the blessing in the failure. And I try really hard to see it. I think that's been one of the reasons why I kept Sunshine, my promotional products business, open for over 15 years. And when I got involved in helping create a woman's networking group in the West Palm Beach community, to me it was really important that many of these small business owners and learn some of the how basic running a business can be. And so, I wish I could think of a great failure. I mean, I've messed up a bunch of jobs in my career. I will tell you, I am the first one to say that I have messed up a bunch of jobs in my career. Not a lot of them, obviously, but I can think of one or two big ones. And it always was how it was handled, because in every single incident where I delivered a product that had a typo in it or never missed a deadline, but, you know, had a problem where the wrong color was delivered or whatnot, it always was how we dealt with the problem, because in every case we continued to work with that client. So from that perspective, you know, we are going to mess up in our careers. We are going to forget something. We are going to, underprice something. We're going to hopefully not miss a deadline, but something will happen. And relationships grow stronger, I think, in the trenches. I think they grow stronger when you've got two people who come together and realize that we need to fix what went wrong. We need to be solutions thinkers, not, you know, blamers of a problem, and move forward. And okay. I know that doesn't sound very eloquent, but we're those clients where I've made a mistake or they've made a mistake that I wasn't able to catch or didn't know because it was something unique to their organization, and how would I know if it was right or wrong if that's what they gave me? Just learning to make sure that clients are accountable for what clients can be accountable. I was accountable for what I could be accountable for. The vendors were accountable for what they could be accountable for. And we all worked together to resolve the problem. And so the greatest learning experience is problems are going to happen, and it's how we deal with them that make us develop really good relationships with our customers, or really bad ones. Because you've got to get ahead of the problem. You can't just close your eyes and say, "Oh, that'll go away if I don't. I won't answer the phone and it'll be fine." You know, mm-hmm. It never works that way.
Well,
Abigail,
hey,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Laura.
Yes, go ahead.
Now I was saying we have about 45 seconds left. And if you could give one piece of wisdom to the listening audience, what would that one piece of wisdom be?
To know who you are, to know the product you're selling, and to be confident in it, and to be passionate in it, so that when you do come across people, either through marketing efforts or just, you know, through divine happenstance, and you're out there talking about your product, people see how committed and passionate you are, because passion will trump knowledge any day of the week. Focus on being a solutions provider and really know what a benefit is of the product you sell, so that when you're talking to customers, they get it, they want it, and they buy it. And I think that's the biggest piece of wisdom, is not to overthink it. Don't make excuses, because if you're in business, you're in sales, as my friend says.
All right. Well, Abigail, we are so grateful that you have joined us this evening, and that has been very eye-opening and very beneficial for us and for our listening audience.
Oh, thank you again. I really am honored that you asked me to come and speak, and I hope your audience was able to take something away from our conversation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again, Rufus. Thank you, Laura.
Okay, have a good evening. Okay.
You too. You too. Good night.
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, sell to success.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
At Sell to Success, we strongly encourage each of our listeners to acquire a personal copy of How I Raised Myself from Failure to Success in Selling by Frank Betker. ISBN number 0671-79437X. I say again, ISBN 0671-79437X by Frank Betker, BETTGER. Sell to Success.
All right, Mr. Rufus, very good. Very good.
Very good. Hey, you know, it flows so much more smoothly when you don't have to create all the conversation.
Right.
I was trying to give her the signal and you know, give the 30-minute hack. I was looking at the time at the top of the board. I should have cut it at